Self-care. It's such a deep, layered word, and for me, it's really become the process of getting to know yourself, showing up for yourself over and over again. In creation of the Self-Care Creature podcast, I want to teach you, too, how to have a relationship with yourself. We're going to dive into the psychological and physiological unfoldings of adopting what I love to call a self-care lifestyle. This podcast is here to help you, the stressed out but spiritually minded individual who can feel that wild calling in your heart, who wants to develop self-care rituals to support your daily living, give you the confidence and know-how to live through your intuition and raise your self-worth. You deserve it. You are capable of this. And I want to help you understand how the hell to get there, what it actually means, and how do you actually live it. That's where my intention is with this podcast. The Self-Care Creature Podcast, brought to you by me, your host, Courtney Klopp. Let's dive in. Hello, creatures. Before we actually get into the episode, I just wanted to pop on real quick and say that I am really excited to share this episode with you with one of my best friends, Caitlin Warzala. At this time, I have hopped a plane and am going to visit her for my birthday this March 15th. I will have been there already. And so that just feels like a really special thing that I also wanted to share with you. And I want to say, I really hope that you enjoy this episode. If you do, please consider taking a screenshot and sharing it on social media. And if any thoughts bubble up for you, feel free to fill out the podcast form in the show notes. Things that we talk about in this episode can be found there. And if I've left anything out, feel free to let me know. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome back. Today we are talking about Sesshin with one of my very best friends, Caitlin, that just got back from her third ever Sesshin. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Welcome onto the podcast, Caitlin.
Thanks for having me.
Would you like to start out just sharing a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I was thinking about this, I don't know, like a half hour ago I was driving and I was like, how, like, what do you even share about yourself? Like, how do I sum up who I am? Right.
Yep.
So I see myself as like a multifaceted person. I did this 10 years in the military thing and then have just been like constantly evolving ever since. And so I think that started most with being a Reiki practitioner. So I do energy work with people and have kind of evolved that into my own practice. I also work on animals, not just humans. I do sound healing and I'm an ecotherapy guide. And I do a lot of work with connecting horses and people.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. I remember, I still remember when you met, like, where did I see it? I think you had made a post or something about that had your background. And I was like, what? I didn't even know half these things. So
yeah.
Cool.
Like, how do you just like, it's such an interesting thing to be like, yeah, this is my journey. And like, when you look back and you're like, wow, I actually have like explored a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I just see it as like, I'm happy to share it with people, but I don't consider myself like an ultra pro professional, you know, it's just, it's what I do and I'm passionate about. So.
Yeah, totally. I relate to that.
Yeah.
So as we dive into this, I want to start us out with just an overview of what is Sesshin for anybody that may not know. And so I was told Caitlin, I was doing some research via ChatGPT. It's my favorite research place now. And you can ask for the resources and things like that too. So anyway, not that I did that this time, but this is what that overview says. It says that Sesshin is a traditional Zen Buddhist meditation retreat. It is an integral part of Zen practice and is characterized by intensive periods of meditation, mindfulness, and self-reflection. Sesshin typically lasts for several days and is conducted in a structured and highly disciplined environment. Participants, often referred to as, and I didn't know this, Sesshiners, follow a strict schedule that includes long periods of Zazen, seated meditation, Kinhin, walking meditation, chanting, and work practice, Samu. The purpose of Sesshin is to deepen one's meditation practice, gain insight into the nature of the self, and experience moments of awakening or enlightenment. During Sesshin, participants maintain noble silence and there is a minimal interaction with others. The strict schedule and environment are designed to minimize distractions and create a focused, contemplative atmosphere Sesshin is conducted under the guidance of a Zen teacher or master, and there are specific rituals and forms associated with this practice. It's essential for participants to prepare themselves mentally and physically for the demands of Sesshin, as it can be physically and mentally challenging. It's a transformative experience for many practitioners, and it plays a vital role in the Zen tradition by allowing individuals to immerse themselves fully in the practice and deepen their understanding of Zen principles. So what?
Wow, that's kind of an impressive summary considering that was generated by AI.
Yeah, right? I know, reading back over it, I was like, oh yeah, that's how I know it to be, in a very well articulated manner. I don't think I could have quite put that together in my own words.
Yeah, same.
Was there anything in here that was new to you?
I didn't know the work periods were called Samu.
Oh yeah, I think I had heard that somewhere, but I didn't quite know that. I'd love if we both shared a little of our own background with Sesshin and the Zen tradition. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you should probably go first.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you want me to? I don't know.
I was going to have you go first, but I'm happy
okay.
to.
No, yeah. Mine's so okay. I feel like this entire episode needs disclaimers because
right.
For me personally, like, I feel like every time I go to Sesshin, everything I thought about the last Sesshin was completely wrong.
Yeah.
And also that, like, I've only practiced at one Zen center. So, like, with one kind of, I don't know, I think a lot of people would say that center's style is more casual or relaxed than other places.
Yeah.
And I really have no idea what I'm doing. So,
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I kind of found Zen by accident because of you, obviously. You know that. But so, I don't know, 2 years ago, I was looking to come into a retreat space, and I had reached out to Courtney and said, like, hey, you talk about these retreats all the time. I think I need to take a step back and just kind of reevaluate where I'm headed in life, generally speaking. And you were like, well, we're short staffed for a retreat, so if you want to come out, we start like next week Friday. And it was like Tuesday and I was in Oregon. And
this one's on the East Coast in New York.
Yeah. Good perspective point. So I showed up next week.
Because you're a badass.
You're the badass. But there's like a whole nother story to that, right? But
sure.
short version, I just sort of like stumbled into this retreat center to staff, and then met our teacher David and spent 3 weeks there as a staff member and loved it and was like, I want to come live here for the winter. And they were like, okay, sure. So in that, I just kind of like fell into Zen and didn't really know what I was doing. I still don't really know what I'm doing, but having a military background and having that like discipline and understanding like customs and courtesies, I fit really well into like the structure of a Zen practice, because there are these, like, in my head, I think of them as like rules and regulations that you follow. Like, you bow when you come into the meditation hall and before you sit down in your seat, in our style. And like, you know, you do, there's this like routine, and I'm really good at like memorizing that. So, and then I just, you know, I lived there for a couple months, and then, yeah, I don't know. I just sort of like showed up and Zen was there. I didn't actively seek Zen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think I forgot that, actually. Like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, yeah, it totally makes sense. But thinking back on it, I was like, oh, I didn't. Yeah, I guess I just, yeah, forgot.
Yeah. I had never, before coming to the retreat center, I had never done like a traditional Zen practice.
Yeah.
And so even as staff members, for the retreat periods that we were working together, I remember the first couple mornings, Courtney would pick me up in this golf cart down in the, like, down in the cold orchard in the middle of October or whatever it was. And And we would go sit for like, I think our periods were like 45 minutes. And I would just remember like my legs were shot. Like I would just be like, sit for like 45 minutes? Okay. But like, I didn't want to break the rules because I had that like military style discipline. So I would just sit there and be in like complete agony. And I was like, okay, I guess this is Zen. Like we chant things, we bow, we drink the tea. Like, okay.
Quite literally.
Yeah. And then I did my first session and I was kind of like, oh, okay, this makes a lot of sense.
Did you do both of your first two sessions when you lived there?
Yeah, when I was a resident. Yeah.
Weren't you there for like 5 or 6 months, not just two?
Yeah, so I did winter and spring.
Okay, yeah.
So it was like the two, because they do them every quarter. So I
Yeah.
could kind of miss the fall one. And then, yeah,
Yeah. Yeah, just for reference, as in like you weren't doing one like once a month.
no, but we
Right.
would sit weekly, because there's the weekly gathering, so it was kind of like a couple hours or whatever, 8:30 to 11:30, whatever that ends up
Oh
being.
yeah, on Sundays. And typically when you are at the retreat center, like you were saying, when I was out there and we were working, there was a morning daily sit for staff, which is optional now, I believe, but it used to be required. Were you required to sit when you lived and worked there daily?
No, it was different because well, they like you to sit, but it's kind of like community started, and then our teacher moved off campus, and so he would like zoom in some mornings if we did it. But it was kind of self-directed. And nobody was like, oh, you didn't show up this morning. It was just,
Right.
yeah, so
And I think that
optional.
really describes Zen too, when you're like, I have no idea where I'm what I'm doing. I just stumbled into it. Like you can't like people like you to do this, but you don't have to. Like it's just like totally the whole essence of it. I guess I stumbled into Zen a little bit before going out to Ithaca. I was like when I was traveling down through Mexico and Central America, like Zen books, just like particularly Osho books, were just like basically falling off the shelves in places I'd visit. And I was interested and they caught my attention and I read them. And so that's like where I was kind of like, oh, like Zen, I really loved Zen philosophy in that regard. And then when I got invited to go out to, or told to go out to the retreat center in Ithaca, that's where the practice really took shape. And same exact feeling. And I don't have a military background. So I was just like, what is this? Like, what are these customs? Like, what the fuck is this? How do you do it? Like, and then it's, I think I became so entranced by it because it's like so simple, logically, fundamentally, and then it's so fucking challenging. And then to also notice all of the stuff that came up within me of like, be like wanting to do everything perfect, but then realizing that that's not what it's about. It just totally hooked me. And when I, after that first year, when I went back to Portland, I had no interest in continuing to sit. I was like, ah, nah, I'm just gonna keep on with my life. And then I think it was like the second, I think it was maybe the second year after I'd gone out and I came back, I attended a Zen temple in Portland a couple times, and it was really beautiful, but I don't like literally only went like twice. So I like kind of was seeking out other community, but didn't not really a full experience. And then it wasn't until after I moved back here in 2019. I'm trying to like piece together my timeline, which would have been like maybe 3 years after I started going to Ithaca, is when I started, when I sought out the Red Cedar Zen community that's here in Bellingham. And then that's when I learned that, oh, like there's different schools of Zen, particularly Rinzai and Soto. And the one out in New York that you and I attend is Rinzai, and Soto that I ended up starting to go to here in Bellingham, or the community in Bellingham was Soto. And so I was like, what is the difference? And
Yeah, please tell me because I still don't know.
okay. Well, I there is a woman that studied Soto, and I think she may have even been ordained as a Soto priest. I'm not sure, that originally studied with David, that I met out at the retreat center. And she specifically told me, and I'll never forget it, and then started noticing it, is that literally between Rinzai and Soto, everything is exact opposite. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, like in Soto, you face the wall, you're facing away from everybody. Everybody has their backs to each other. In Rinzai, when you're sitting in the meditation hall, everyone faces each other. And where you turn right in Rinzai, you turn left in Soto, and like all of these like tiny little things. And yeah, and I'm like,
What?
it's like, I feel like there's somewhere along the line, like a rivalry split or something like that, but I don't know the specifics.
Interesting.
Very interesting. What I read up on it was Sesshin can, this is the specific thing I wrote down. Sesshin can vary depending on the Zen school. Soto and Rinzai are the two major sects, each with their own style, but Zen Buddhism is a diverse tradition with various sects, each with its own unique practices and interpretations of Zen teachings. And then I went on and found like eight more popular sects of this tradition, which I didn't even know that. I only knew about Soto and Rinzai. And so Soto, I don't know. There's like, we can split hairs here. I'm not sure I entirely agree with this, but this is like what I found, is that Soto tends to be more structured with precise forms and long periods of sitting meditation. And Rinzai Sesshin may include koan study, which is kind of like riddles, and shorter but more intense meditation sessions. That's where I'm like, how are they just like more intense? Anyway, but the choice between Soto and Rinzai depends on your personal preference and the specific experience that you may be seeking.
So, as somebody who started out with Rinzai and then ended up in Soto, what do you, are there things that you like more than the other in one style?
I think the biggest difference that I really notice is in the Kinhin walking meditation. And I remember that, I can't, was it David? I can't remember. Somebody was like, you know, Soto does everything like much slower, way slower, more serious like pace than Rinzai. And the first time I ever did Soto walking meditation, I was like, this, no, they weren't lying. They were not lying. Like, I usually get up and like show an example of this, but like imagine walking and you're placing. Well, okay, hold on. I'm gonna explain the Rinzai version first because it's just easier. It's just a slow walking pace. You're just like, it's just very casual. Like, you're not walking fast by any means, but you're walking. And in Soto, it's like you take a step forward and the back of your heel maybe comes to the middle of your other foot. And it's like that very slow creep as you like transition. You love
No.
that
No.
scoff. Yes.
No. Unsubscribe. I'm not down for that. We actually in our we had some rainy days, and so we did our walking meditation, our Kinhin, inside the meditation hall. But we had
Right.
like 20 people, and
Whoa.
so it was like packed. So like by the time the circle was formed around the benches, it was almost the entire thing. And
Whoa.
so I don't know if like we started out slow because there were so many people and we was like trying not to chase down the last person before everybody started moving, but we never sped up. And I had like I've been battling this calf injury and it was agonizing to go that slow because you're just like barely heel toeing and I'm like
Yeah.
my calf and I just felt like a wobbly like half penguin like trying to not step or fall or like trip over myself because my calf is cramping.
Oh my gosh. Ow.
So that's how now that feels very like Soto to me. But
Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah.
that's wild. So I just want to specify too, for people that don't know, at the Ithaca Zen Center, a lot of times the Kinhin is on an outside trail because the Zendo is kind of located in the middle of this foresty type area, which is so beautiful.
Absolutely.
And then the sessions that I've done are also have only ever been with the Ithaca Zen Center and is in the Rinzai tradition. And I've thought about it a few times, like wanting to do like a session with my community out here, which is Soto. And it's like, it's funny. I really do notice there are resistances within my body. I'm like, I don't want to just sit and face the wall like the whole time. But it's like, what's the difference, really, if you're just sitting there anyway, you know, and you're not like,
I think it would be an entirely different experience.
It would indeed.
I was definitely like, this last one was probably my most disciplined, but I'm definitely that person, that sashiner who sits and like casually glances. Like, I have little comfort things. Like, I love when I can sort of see the clock.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. I have a personal rule, and it is do not look at the clock. I cannot look at the clock.
Yeah, I can't not. If I'm like, especially on the, and like the periods where my brain is like super chattery or like my body really hurts, I'm like, I love seeing the clock and being like, okay, I have 13 minutes ish. I can do this. Like, let's just calm the mind. It's like comforting. It's like a little mind cookie.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. I totally could.
I also love seeing other people. So,
right. Yes, I do too. Like,
watching the wall would be like probably much, much more satisfying from like the actual session purpose perspective. But it would not personally satisfy me.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I also subtly look around. I'm not like staring people down, but I like to try and sit in the two times I've done it. I like to try and sit in front of a window, and my gaze often just goes outside and I'll just stare at the trees and I'll focus on my breath. I'll focus on just being, you know, like I don't feel like it's a distraction, but it like imagining just staring at the wall instead of the trees. There's some things that come up in me thinking about that.
Yeah, it's sort of, it feels a little bit sadistic to me to be like, just sit and stare at the wall like you're in timeout.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So the sitting periods, should we talk about the length of that? Because I feel like that may be a question people are wondering.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be a good place to start.
I think with Rinzai, it's 20 to 30 minutes. Isn't that right? With the practice we've had.
Okay. So that's how the Ithaca Zen Center does it, is about 25 to 30 minutes.
Okay.
After my first session. Okay. I know we're going to kind of go into this later, but my first session was brutal.
Okay.
Like, I have a lot of like chronic body issues, like knee pain, back pain, my pelvis is misaligned, my spine, I've got like compression in certain areas. So like, just kind of like head to toe, I'm like a 90-year-old woman, you know, but I'm like actually only 33. So sitting, like the worst thing for me is inactivity. Like if I'm inactive, my pain level just skyrockets.
Yeah.
So my first session, I was wrecked. Like, I just felt like, I think after day two or three, like somebody ran me over with a truck in my sleep. Like I just like woke up and it was like, my knees hurt, my back hurts, my neck hurts, my freaking shoulders. The worst. And it like really was hard to mentally overcome that, to like really be present in the practice and like find your breath and like,
excuse me,
do, you know, just like do the practice and be present with the practice. And it is the practice to also have the body pain, right? But
yeah,
like it's being with all of it.
Yeah.
But at the end, long story short, I, you know, after everything ended and we're like saying our goodbyes or like kind of like greeting each other in like the world again,
mm-hmm,
before we go off into our separate worlds, I went up to the person who was the Jiki, which for people who don't know, is the person who sort of like leads the meditation. And I said, I'm sorry for the things I thought about you when my body was in pain. Because they were not nice. I was like, this guy is a freaking asshole. Like, ring the goddamn bell. Like, I'm fucking over this. This is stupid. Whatever. And the only response I got was something along the lines of, oh, this is nothing. I think they practice at Rin's IG. At Rin's IG, we sit for 45 minutes. And I was just like, okay. Like, I was kind of like, where's like the love and compassion Buddhist Zen thing? And then also like, okay, fuck me. I'm insignificant. Like,
right. You know,
like, I'm struggling with 25 minutes.
I think I remember when you told me about that.
Yeah. And I was just like, I literally had no idea what to say to that. I was just like, oh, okay, well, I'm still sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so yes, 25 to 30 ish, maybe 45. I don't know.
Right. Well, I think 25 to 35 with what we're accustomed to out in on the East Coast. And then, yeah, in Soto, the Soto tradition that I practice with, I don't remember specifically, but I feel like it's between 30 and 45.
Yeah,
I know that we do have a 40-minute sit period during one of our sits, one evening during the week. So, yeah. And it's funny, like, yeah, let's get into these nuances and our experiences, because, like, yeah, minutes can be an eternity. I also, side note, just want to say the session that you and I have practiced in is a 7-day retreat. And sometimes they're 5 days. I've heard of 3. Sometimes they're 10 or 12. So, like, it really varies. But you and I have the experience of 7 days.
Yeah. I was thinking about it, though, after this last one. And it's, in some ways, it's kind of like 5. It's like 5 with a buffer on each side. But it's 7 days of being there.
Right, because you start in the evening on day 1 and you end in the morning on day 7.
Yeah.
Totally.
So it's like 5 full days and then kind of the buffer on either side.
Yeah, totally.
But I think there are sometimes there are like 6 days with the buffer. The more it's like the dinner, opening dinner and closing breakfast.
Right.
So, yeah. I don't know. What was your first session like?
Okay, so I've done 2 sessions, and I do feel kind of ready for another one, but I also am challenging myself to, like, live my life, because I know I can fucking do retreats. Anyway, my first session, I have a habit in my life or a pattern in my life that seems to go where the first time I do something, it's like smooth sailing. And then the second time is pretty challenging.
Okay.
And so the first one was pretty decently smooth sailing. I'm trying to think of like what I remember. I definitely like tapped into what they might say is like the enlightenment. Like I felt like, and when I was talking to you before, I call it bliss mode, is like, I was totally tapped into just like, oh my God, I absolutely love this experience of just being and not having to think about anything and just eating amazing food. And both sessions that I did, I were no more than 12 people, and it may have been a bit less than that. So I have never experienced that full 20, 25 person situation that I've heard about. It was the first time that I ever had like a vision and a journey on my own, unprovoked, from like a guided meditation. That's my first session is where I received my vision for my spider tattoo on my finger. And definitely excruciating pain, like all times, both times. But I definitely, like, we can definitely talk about that more too, but that was, I like, I remember sitting there and like, I was like, wow, like the internal narrative, right? I'm like, wow, my back really hurts. This really fucking hurts. Like it hurts really bad. And I was like, yeah, whew, like, let's just take a breath. It's okay. And I was like, it's not okay. Actually, I'm really not okay. And I'm like, yeah, I hear you. And we're noticing that. And I'm just going to keep breathing. I'm like, you could have cancer. Like just like straight in, like, you could have cancer and you're not paying attention. I'm like, I am paying attention. And I really like, you know, what if it is cancer? Like, I'm okay. I'm just sitting here. I'm in excruciating pain. And that was a really big moment of just like noticing a different relationship with my mind and how intense it can be. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like learning that, what is that edge for yourself, you know, and like learning, and sometimes we do have to learn by going too far, I suppose, in life in general, but it's just really helped me to recognize what my edges are and what I can endure, and also what is truth and what is not, and noticing those wild stories that the mind makes up sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you feel like, I know you said typically it goes smoother the first time. Body pain wise, did you feel it was different the second time around?
That is a really good question. It didn't feel different for me. Like, I think, at least from what I remember, it was just as excruciating. And I still had a lot of fear in my body because of, like, I think I knew more about being hypermobile and had actually identified that within my language for my body by the second time. And so I was like, you know, like, my joints are going to roll out of place. I'm not going to be okay for months to come after this. Like, I just like made up all of like these kinds of stories that weren't completely far-fetched. You know, these are things that happen to hypermobile people. Yeah, and definitely like the pain was still there. I think if anything, I just learned how to support my body a little differently and then also listen to my body better. So like if my right leg tends to always fall asleep, and so to just come out of that and be in chair pose. And then I got asked to not move so much in the second one, which was, and the first time David was like, you know, if your leg falls asleep, you can just move to chair pose. And David is our Zen master and he does tend to be more laid back. And then it was a different person leading the second time. And so he's like, you know, you can just be in chair pose. And I was like, actually, like, I didn't say this to him, of course, but I was like, it's comfortable for me to sit on the cushion with my legs crossed. I love it. I do not want to sit in chair pose like the whole sit period. That makes my back hurt so much worse. So
yeah,
I didn't, like I said, didn't talk back or anything like that. I was just like, okay, I'll try my best.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
Like absolutely. Sometimes you just have to move.
Yes. Yes. What was it like for your body?
I think, okay, so I definitely agree. Like I learned how to manage the pain a little bit better. And actually thanks to you, because I think the first one I was just like completely helpless. Like I had a heating pad because it was the middle of winter and I was living in cold ass upstate New York. But I also used like a hot water bladder because we had a really hot water spigot that I would like go. And I would literally, like, I had to miss sitting periods the first one, and I would pull up. It was kind of in the Zoom era of Sitchin. So that we had some people that were on Zoom and some people in person. And so I would pull up the Zoom link in my bedroom, laying on a heating pad and like this hot bladder and like roll out my back. And like, I had this like crazy regimen of like, I think I took like 2 or 3 baths, Epsom salt baths a day, my first one. Like it was just, whoa. It was dumb. Yeah. The second one, I feel like I still had the pain, but my mind was different about it. Like the first one, I felt like it was just such a shock to my body and my mind was so chattery about it. Like kind of like you were saying, that like develops these narratives, right? Like maybe you have cancer. Like, it wasn't quite to that level, but it was like similar, you know, similar talk where you're just like, I can't do this. You know, it's like the body panicking or my mind panicking about my body. And I learned to sort of separate them in a way to be like, or I guess pull out the narrative and be like, that's just a story. Like, that's just my mind's manic activity, which is kind of the whole point of Sesshin, right? Is like to see the contents of your mind. So, in some ways, the body pain was actually like a catalyst for me being able to like connect to the things that David's sharing about the wisdom and the insight. So it's kind of like, it's like a blessing and a curse because you're like dying physically, but you're like, okay, wait, but I like get it. So I do feel like this third time was a lot better body pain wise. I still definitely had it, but I wasn't so like just smacked upside the head. But I've been taking care of my body differently now versus like I've been weightlifting a lot and running a lot, and I wasn't doing those things for the first two. So that I don't know if that also helps for my body.
I could imagine that would definitely assist in being able to endure that more, especially like strength training. It's like the stability within the muscles.
Trying to think of like other first time things, but all of it is honestly just like such a shock that you're just kind of like, okay, and you just kind of like follow the leader.
I was also trying to remember more things, and I pulled up the notes because I have notes from both sessions in my phone, and I didn't realize I took so many fucking notes. It was like I used it as like a journal. So I definitely cannot like read it all right now, but I do remember you mentioned like rolling out your back and your body, and I did write that down from my first session. What's better than sex? A foam roller during session.
Hell yes. Oh my God, yes. Yeah, 1,000%. Like there were times that I would during Kinhin, so like for us at least at Ithaca Zen Center, if you need to use the bathroom or anything, that like Kinhin is the time to do it. So you just bow out while everybody's walking around and then you go do whatever you gotta do. Well, my room as a resident, luckily, was like right next to the Zendo. So I would just like buzz over there, like run in, foam roll real quick, pee, and then like book it back to Kinhin. But yeah, that was like, okay, now I can sit for 25 more minutes and then rinse and repeat.
Yes, absolutely. I think a lot of people think when you say I'm going to like a silent, that's the other piece, I guess, of it is that you're in silence, silent meditation retreat, and that I'm meditating for like 10 hours a day. It's not entirely out there, that is essentially what we're doing. But then when you break it down and you're like, okay, well, there's sitting periods and you're not just sitting for 10 hours, at least for me and my body, that made it a lot more manageable.
Totally. How was the silence for you? The transition to silence.
I really enjoyed it. I like quiet. I like the awareness of what you notice when you are, just being in silence with other people. And it like when I'm remembering now my 200-hour teacher training back in 2015 was led by a Zen teacher. And that was a practice that we were introduced to as like an invitation to not talk in the morning, to talk after our first yoga class. So when we like got up, we weren't talking and like no talking during class and things like this. And it was just an invitation, but most of us followed it. And I remember that was my first experience ever with that. And it was so interesting. I'm so deeply curious by the things that come up within myself. And so noticing, it's even like people pleaser tendencies, I would say, of just wanting to like just be cordial and say hi and acknowledge people, and how like off put I felt when somebody like didn't acknowledge me or like, were just doing their own thing. And slowly just realizing like that has nothing to do with me. Like we're all just doing our own thing and I don't have to acknowledge people. And so that experience, as that experience grew through Zen practice, I think it's something that I really have come to enjoy in Sesshin. I really like the quiet. I think we're expected in our world a lot to just like chat and we do tend to chat to just try and fill space. And mm-hmm. I really enjoy the silence.
Yeah, well, my first session was my first as a resident as well. And so
oh, yeah.
I kind of had a different experience in that I was helping, we had a really small crew of residents at that time. And so I was kind of one of the main people to help get the facility ready and like planning things. And I just remember like rolling, I felt like I was like sliding into a grave coming into Sesshin, you know, just like, woo, okay, here we are. And so for me, I was like physically exhausted. I was emotionally exhausted. I think I even like messaged you or like sent you a voice message crying in the orchard, like the day before, or even even the morning of.
I remember that.
Yeah. Like I was just like, I felt like I was doing everything, which is very much me. It wasn't necessarily the reality of the situation, but I'm just kind of a natural leader who like comes in and takes charge and like manages projects. And so that to me was like managing a project. And I'm like, okay, let's do this. So I remember the first day or two, I was just like, ah, oh, finally I can just be and like just breathe. And I don't have to work. I don't have to do anything. Like everything's taken care of. But yeah, I'm also one of those people that really seeks like social validation, you know, if that's what we're going to call it.
I like that term.
Yeah. So like even actually in this last one that I did, there was one person that I was like, do they not like me? Because like a couple of times we've made eye contact and like they just had a kind of a like resting bitch face basically.
Mm.
And I sat next to this person. So I was like, did I do something wrong? Like, because sometimes the person you sit next to is like your greatest teacher and
oh, yeah.
because they annoy the shit out of you. And I was like, oh my God, I'm annoying the shit out of her. Like, fuck, you know? so I was like really self-conscious about it. And then I kind of remembered that in the more, I don't know if you want to say strict or disciplined Sesshins, you actually don't make eye contact with people.
Oh, yeah.
And this person was kind of a more seasoned practitioner, or you know, had been maybe, I feel like David, our Zen teacher, has gotten a little bit more relaxed as he's gotten older,
mm-hmm.
Which isn't a bad thing. I think it makes Sesshin really accessible. But
yeah,
I wondered then if maybe she had experienced Sesshin in a more strict setting where like you don't make eye contact, but I'm like, but we're making eye contact, and like how hard is it to just smile just a little bit, you know, like
right,
I don't need a conversation, but like again that cordialness like you were saying.
Yeah,
anyway, but I all in all like really enjoy the silence, and I find that even after Sesshin I want the silence, not pure silence, but like I enjoy the quiet.
Yes. Absolutely. And to just notice, I think one of the biggest other things I noticed between the two for me was the way my mind was wound up.
Mm-hmm.
And like after, I think it was after my first session, it was in the fall after we'd done all the work. And so it was like an ending of the season. And coming out of that, like my mind, I remember sitting on the bench overlooking the pond and just feeling like I had no thoughts in my head. Like I just felt present. I wasn't thinking about anything. Like, and I think about that from time to time because out here in the real world, like that's just like not really possible. Like it's really challenging to cultivate when you have so much information and things that you have to tend to coming at you in your daily life. That's just the way it is. And especially mm-hmm. if we're consuming social media in any way. And
so true.
My second Sesshin I was at the beginning of the summer. So before I went into a long work period of being there for a few months, and it was, I'm laughing to myself because it was like, I think it was day three. And I was just, I was feeling super wound up. Like my mind was like, I could not rest. I could not be comfortable. This was not the way I experienced it the first time. And, some friends that were living there on campus that were not participating in Sesshin were in like the staff kitchen. And when I saw them, when I dipped out of Kinhin to go to the bathroom, as you were describing, and, you know, they were just like being so polite to not talk to me because, you know, that's just like what you do. And I was just like, I just need to talk to you guys for a second. And they were like, oh, okay. Like, what's up? And I just like word vomited. And I was like, I'm losing my mind. La, 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 la. Like, I just can't do it. And we just had like a really big laugh. And then after that, I was good. And I had like this huge epiphany of how I'm a verbal processor and sometimes I just do need to share and like, you know, it was, but I had to have that moment. And interestingly enough, you know, you could say that I was like, that was inappropriate and that's not what you're supposed to do and like all this stuff. But really what it all is about is that learning, just that learn, whatever you learn, how that happens for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's kind of the thing that makes the Ithaca Zen Center experience of Sesshin a little bit different is like, especially us both coming from more of like a staff point of view, where we're like combining it with another aspect of the retreat center, which is not Zen focused, and being staff members there, like there are these other little things that are going on. Or like for me, being a resident and being in Sesshin was also really weird because like, during my interviews with my teacher, he would like be like, oh, the wood's getting delivered today. And I'm like, cool, David, but I'm having like a Zen crisis in my mind, you know, like, I don't give a shit about the wood.
Right. Like, whatever,
you know? So it was just like all these little things, but that I think make it really unique about being there. And it's also like, maybe the blessing and the curse of Sesshin's there is that it is, you know, like, I don't know, I remember my first session, you know, so sitting for long periods of time, you tend to get constipated. So they give you prunes as part of your meal. And my friend was helping serve breakfast. And there was like this stewed fruit that they put on top of oatmeal.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, tell them how much you want. Well, in the first scoop, she put like 5 prunes in my oatmeal. Oh. And later I saw her. And I was like, you put 5 prunes in my oatmeal. Like, what are you doing? She's like, you're going to get constipated, and kind of like bowed at me. And I was like, I'm not constipated though. Like, I'm fine. Like, I didn't need 5 prunes, dude. Like, I have to every Kinhin go because I'm like, my stomach is grumbling. Like, it just, there's a whole other set of issues with the prunes.
Yes.
So anyway, there's just like little things where you, because it's sort of a casual Zen environment, it allows you a little bit of wiggle room,
right,
to get the crazies out, and then
yes,
you kind of come back to the practice.
Exactly.
And I don't know if that's unique to the Zen Center, because, or to the Ithaca Zen Center, but I definitely enjoy that aspect.
Yes, I do too. And I also wonder how unique that is, but I've seen other people do it too. Like I've been in the sauna, and it was just because we have sauna breaks sometimes, depending on the time of year, which is definitely unique to Ithaca. You know, it's just something they have on their property. But I've been in there and somebody else like comes in and they're just like, la, 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 la. Like they just have to like say something out loud. I remember actually, I'm going to share it. I don't have to say who it was, of course, but yeah, this person came in and we're in the sauna and they're all warming up and they're like, I've been shivering in the Zendo. I've just been shivering like a little snowman. And like, it was just so funny. And then everything is so like, it's like you either flatline and don't give a fuck about anything and you don't have any reaction over this week where you're in this meditative state, or I feel like everything becomes hilarious.
And for me, I find it's a little bit of both sometimes.
Yes.
And it totally depends on where my like mind is at. Like if I'm like wound up and I'm kind of hyper or like I'm excited about something, I find that like the funnies kind of ride with that, you know?
Right.
I don't know. There's just like can I tell the shower smell story?
I think you should, because it's a very interesting perspective of this relationship with the mind, right?
Yeah. Okay, so my first session, I was a resident and there was
Sending me
another
messages a couple times.
sending. Okay, so I am disciplined in the Zendo. Outside of the Zendo, I'm kind of a little bit lax, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
So my first session, I was there for like, I don't know, I think like maybe almost 2 months as a resident. And then another resident had come in just a couple of weeks before and before session. And he was like a little bit older than me, pretty attractive. Like I'd heard good things about him through like the little Zen grapevine. So, you know, casually curious. It never panned out to be anything, but like you can't help, you know, but wonder a little bit.
Attraction's
So
attraction,
we,
yeah.
yeah, was not really attracted to him, but mostly just like curious.
The
He's, I mean, he's a
curiosity
good,
attraction of people in your
he's a good looking
community
dude,
space. Yeah, that's all I, yeah.
yeah, totally. So I think it was like day three. So like mind is starting to quiet down, all of this. It might have even been a little bit later, but you know, about halfway through. And so the way that our rooms lined up, his bathroom was on the other side of my bathroom. Like it's like we shared a shower wall. And so if you're running water, you could like hear them showering or whatever. So one day we were on a break and I went to the bathroom. Like I came into my room and was just like really flowing. Like, you know, sometimes you end a period and you're just like, I'm gonna ride this wave and just like coast out the quiet mind space.
A
I was
sitting period.
totally,
Yeah.
And I was totally just going through the motions and not like totally embodying everything I was doing. And I noticed that the shower was on in this guy's room. And I was like, wow, his body wash smells really good. And then I was like, wait, why can I smell his body wash? Like, we've been neighbors for like 2 or 3 weeks. I've never been able to, I've heard him shower 100 times. I've never been able to smell his body wash before, but like, what is that? Is that like Old Spice? Is it like, what flavor of Old Spice? Is it like $5.97 on rollback at Walmart? Like, my
Getting
mind
into the
just fucking
details.
tunneled. Yeah. And I'm like looking at like the space where the walls meet the ceiling, as if there's like a pipe coming out of the wall that like suddenly appeared. And I walk out of my bathroom to see if it's on the other side of the wall, because clearly there has to be like a smell tunnel.
Right.
And it wasn't there, surprising. And I go back into the bathroom to like further investigate because clearly I must have missed it the first time. And then I like remembered all of the sudden that I had just taken a shit and sprayed some air freshener. And it was like cedar, musky, lemon, something, something. And I really thought that it was his body wash coming through the wall. And I could not stop laughing. And I was like, oh, I get it now. Like, this is what you've been talking about, David. Like, that is how crazy the mind is. Like, it just fucking, like this fucking pipe was gonna just like drill itself through the wall one day. Like, what?
Right.
What?
And well, I just love that story. It cracks me up every single time I hear it. But it's just
Thanks.
such a microcosm to what, like, think about being like in a situation under pressure or in a stress out situation. Like our mind, like we're just wired to come up with solutions. And or like, what is your default mechanism? Is it to like deflect and deny or like try to find solutions or like whatever it is? And I think that's part of why I love Zen and Sesshin and meditation practice all together, is just learning to have a different relationship with your mind and learning what the mind does, like how it operates.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And being able to like recognize, I don't like to label it as crazy, right? But like the craziness of the mind, like to see it when it's, when I say crazy, I really mean like the overactivity. Like
Yes.
it's just like hyperactive.
Right.
When it's just like go, 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 go. And then to be able to like recognize that when you're in it, in the real world, not in Sesshin land, and
Yeah.
be like, okay, wait, this is just to have that like split second of discernment to be like, this is my mind being a little bit crazy. I'm gonna take a breath.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, life changing, honestly.
Truly. Yeah. And
Yeah.
that's, yeah, I think what is so important about learning, like, yeah, just having a different relationship with your body. And I mean, I'm sure David has gone into this in such more eloquent ways through Dharma talks and things like this, but just it's that reminder that the mind, left to its own device, thinks that it is everything. Like it is you, and you are this human being. And rather than like taking into account that it is an organ, it's one piece of you, and it's not everything, and that it doesn't need to like take over and run the entire show.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Do you, so did, before, I know you kind of like stumbled into Zen in a way as well, but did you have a meditation practice before you found Zen?
Yes, I had started meditating in 2014 when I was
Okay.
traveling.
Okay.
Yeah. And I that was like largely, I guess it was like a little bit of everything, like, but I'd say that was largely visualizations and guided meditations. And that is something that became very fascinating to me along the journey, excuse me, and especially into Zen, was because I was like, well, is it really meditation if you're sitting and just thinking about being somewhere and your mind's just like on all this hyperactivity anyway? Whereas Zen is like, you know, very much like take a breath and invite the mind back and rest the mind on the breath. And then, of course, like the nuances that there's no right or wrong way, and that I think that there's benefits to both. But ultimately, what I feel is most important, and this is my personal bias opinion, is being able to find that silence within your mind over time. And that doesn't mean that it's going to be there, like you find it and you have it forever. It's like having a practice, a dedicated practice in a way that you can get to know your mind in a different way so that you can experience blips of that. Because even for me now, 9 years into a meditation practice, it's like when my stress levels are high, my mind chatter's high, you know, like it totally just goes in waves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, I've had a meditation practice on and off.
Okay.
I'm not super consistent, generally speaking, in most things in life. But I do really well when I drop back in. And the thing I didn't really expect with Zen was for like I think not knowing what I was walking into, right? I was just like, okay, we just sit and then we like chant and then we, you know, whatever. And then like the Dharma talks happened and I was like, oh, like there's this whole like really beautiful philosophy and insight, wisdom that David shares so eloquently, but so like comprehensible. Comprehensible? Is that a word? Whatever. Easy to comprehend for the non-monastic person.
Yes.
Because I think there is like when I've picked up books about Zen, it's like, okay, yeah, but this is like Shakespearean Zen. I need
Right.
like Harry Potter Zen, you know? Like I need to be able to like read it and understand it and like be able to really integrate it into my system a little bit.
Yeah.
But I didn't really expect like the philosophy and the wisdom to take hold the way it does. And I think it's just, I think a big piece of that is finding that silence within yourself, a stillness, really, is what I see it as.
Yeah. I would love to wrap up this episode with talking just a little bit more into that philosophy, I had written down a quote that you had said that David said during session, and he says it all the time. I wrote it down.
Okay.
Don't worry, I'll share it. Yeah, to just like dive into the intricacies of this real quick, and we can leave people with this. But it is the quote, the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your mind. And he also, I specifically remember, goes on, at least in my experience, I've heard him go on to say that no sane, logical person within their own choosing would choose the quality of their mind that they realize they've like come upon, particularly just with like, yeah, the like we're talking about, the nonstop chatter, anxiety, depression, like all of these things. But I think that that's where sometimes this kind of stuff can be really challenging. And meditation, it's another reason why meditation is not a good launch off point for just anybody, because especially depending on how much you do struggle with mental health issues, I don't mean to say issues, but just struggle with mental health. I think that it can be like exponentially more challenging, and especially to grasp some of these things, because at the end of the day, David's been a Zen teacher and practitioner for like 60 years now or something, maybe not quite that long, but
I think
50
37 with Roshi.
with Roshi specifically, his teacher.
So, but but yeah, I mean, I don't think he started when he was 16, but 40, 50 years, somewhere in there.
I think he was 25, if I remember, right? And he's like 78 now.
77, But I mean, either way, he's been seeking. He has a really interesting, like, if you, I, David is a unique teacher and he is incredible, but I think he is definitely a child of the 70s in a lot of ways, and so he has some really funny stories about like how he found Zen. So just want to like throw that little disclaimer out there. But he's really real about it and it worked. But
I guess I don't know if I really had any more to say about it other than that, is that it's just like Zen can be a mind fuck.
Clearly. And well, and I think, you know, actually that was something that was reflected back to me this past one was like, there were a couple of comments made from senior practitioners who had studied with David's teacher, Roshi, who were like, you seem very like stable. Like you, your mind is in a stable place to be able to receive, and it like it shows in your practice. And somebody even asked me afterwards, like, how I got to that place, like, how am I here? And I think it's worth noting that, like, yeah, if you're like, I have experienced a lot of, I think everybody's experienced trauma, but being in the military and experiencing like combat related trauma and family related trauma during that time, that stuff was all like really captivating my mind. In the years before I found Zen. But I, like, when I got out of the military, which is 5 years ago in like 3 days, which is crazy, I worked really fucking hard to like unwind that mess, like physically, emotionally, mentally, like whole nine yards. Anything I could find, I like soaked up because I knew that I didn't want to stay in that place. And I think doing the work before. Before you do something as intense as session is helpful because it allows you to just have like more of an open mind towards the practice, towards the teaching, towards the stillness. Otherwise, I think what a lot of people find is they're like these mental hurdles that they have to play because they're still kind of unpacking some of those traumas or those like big life questions. Like they kind of come into session with like a midlife crisis type situation. Like, should I retire early and quit my job because work sucks or whatever? Or is this relationship the right relationship? And I think those can kind of, those are all really normal and they can kind of complicate the session experience. But that doesn't, to me, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't come to Zen until you're ready, because there's always going to be things unfolding,
Of
but
course.
it's just starting with smaller bites than sushin.
Yes, that's a really great reminder and something that we did write down that we wanted to mention, that there are ways to start and get involved without diving into sesshin. And if you want to continue with meditation, there are, you know, most Zen centers have a program, like weekly various programs. There's day sits that happen that are between like 6, 8, 12 hours sometimes. But I love what you're also saying. What I hear you saying is finding practices that help you to get to know yourself, expand your awareness, and even embody, like have a relationship with your body in different ways before you just make meditation like the end all be all thing. And yeah, I love that. And yes, meditation is a great tool. And I also think that it needs to be coupled with other tools as well.
Totally.
And as you were telling me, and I have other friends that say this, I think, and I completely agree too, is that I think in our modern day right now, there the like the modern day Zen Buddhist is really trying to learn how to bridge the gap from how it's been a like a isolated monastic in the mountains practice and bring it to our everyday society and living.
Yeah, absolutely. Even in the last session, like whatever, like a week ago, there were a lot of questions from people on that, and even from myself, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny how simple it is.
Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
I can, yeah. I don't know if I should say this story, but I'll just do it anyway. I kind of had, what do you call it, like a bliss moment?
Yeah, bliss mode.
Yeah, bliss mode. I had like a bliss mode morning where I really felt like I was like, I don't like using awakened or enlightened,
I
but I'm like,
know, I don't either, but you were getting it.
Yeah, I was getting it. I call it like in my head, I call it standing in the sun.
Oh,
And
ooh.
David will sometimes use phrasing like standing in the light of the one who knows you or something like that. And I
Okay.
think it kind of stemmed from there, but like, you just kind of like, you see the light, you're standing in the light, whatever,
Yeah,
or
sure.
like the sun is shining, whatever.
Okay, I
So
like that.
yeah, I had like a day or two of really feeling like I was in the sun, and I was thinking about my romantic partner, and I was like, there's no way, right? He's got like the busiest mind, which is beautiful. I love that. But I'm like, I really want to bring this like silence and stillness into my home life, right? I'm like kind of thinking beyond session. And I was like, but how am I going to get him to do that? And so I asked David during one of my interviews, which is just like a one-on-one time for people who don't know that part of the practice. But I was like, so I'm seeing this glimpses of this light that you're talking about. And I feel like I'm really getting it this time. I don't know if I said it that way, because I'm pretty sure he'll be like, you're not, but whatever. but I said, how do I like bring that into my partnership if my partner, or into my home life if my partner doesn't also see the light? And he just kind of like looked at me and he was like, does he rub your feet? And I was like, what? He's like, does he rub your feet? And I was like, well, yeah. And he's like, so who cares if he sees the light? And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, you're kind of right. Like, and it just hits you. And you're like, yeah, he's not asking, like, is he physically rubbing my feet? Like, yes, in some ways he is, right? But what he's really saying is like, is there love? Does he love you? Does he express his love?
Yeah.
If yes, then like, who cares if he's standing in the sun or not? You can stand in the sun.
Yeah. And
And you
that's,
just,
oh, so beautiful.
You, yeah. And you, he, and he like kind of elaborated and was just like, you show up and you be love. And that is like lead by example, right? Of just like, you focus on you, you be in the sun, and everybody else will see the sun and be like, wow, that's really pretty.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll come to the sun and maybe they won't. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to everything that we talk about with like modern day Zen practice, work stuff, relationships, like how to be in the crazy modern world that we live in and still be a Zen practitioner.
Yeah.
Like embody the Zen.
Right.
Because it's just like, just be a source of love and kindness. Done.
I love that. And yeah, what I hear in that too is like, yeah, if it's important to you and you're supported in your other relationships and endeavors, like what, you know, and of course this can go deeper into more personal questions. How important is it for you to like have a shared practice or these types of shared values? But that's like an individual question. And what David is telling you is like, it doesn't have to be that way.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I thought that was just really beautiful.
Me too.
But now I'm just like, some there are days that I get a little bit wound up and I'm like, does he rub my feet? You know, or
yeah,
whatever the issue
absolutely.
Is, not just with him, but like with modern day stuff. And you're like, okay, he's rubbing my feet.
Yes. I love those little tidbits that sometimes we carry away from the Zen practice. Is he rubbing my feet? David had asked me once, or he not asked me, he told me to be like the something like to be like the bumblebee and to just go around like a bumblebee just goes around and nuzzles the flowers and like doesn't care about anything else going on. And I feel like same but different, you know. It's like, be yourself, what is important to you, like everything else will follow. Be the love, spread the love. And I just think about that sometimes, like, are you being the bumblebee?
yeah totally. I'll share one last one that I think is very relatable for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a small, I call him my dog Wrigley. He passed away in January, but I had him with me at the Zen Center when I was a resident. And so David, during my first session, one of the most powerful things he said to me was, what if you looked at everybody the way you look at Wrigley? And what if you treated everybody the way that you love and care for Wrigley? And at that time, especially, he was, you know, like 12 or 13 and had hip issues. And like, so he's kind of like my tender little, you know, had to care for him. I had to like pick him up and bring him up steps and, you know, all those things. And so it really was like this love-based practice for me and for him to be like, okay, that's your, that like, that's my in, right? And I was like, oh,
yeah.
That, and so now every time I see a dog, I just think of like, am I treating everybody like I treat a dog? Like, it's, they're just, there's something in them that brings out like unconditional love,
right,
in people. And it, to me, that just hits home of like the way that you look at your animal and love on them, you can be that same source of love for humans too.
Right. I love that reminder and that share. And it's those little things that I feel like, yeah, just perpetuate my like rabbit hole for this curiosity and Zen and love and like knowing yourself and being yourself in the world, because I'm like, is that really possible? Like, could everyone really, like, could you?
Yeah.
And like, and then it's like, but yeah, you sit in Sesshin and you hear stories. David has so many amazing stories, both personal and also historical. And then you can also do that own research yourself. And yeah, there is like restorative justice, for example, you know, like there are ways that humans learn how to face each other and love each other despite all of like the horrific things that are also alive in the world. And I think that's what helps me feel stable and hopeful in our world today, is knowing that we get the option and the opportunity to keep that alive.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think if that's like the one thing that I've taken away from Zen, I'm very happy with that. Like if everything I know is wrong, but I got that check in the box, I'm happy.
Yes. Ooh, that actually gave me some tingles in my shoulders. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap this up. It's been a fabulous conversation. Can you let people know where they can find you? Do you do virtual work, or like what's up in your world?
I do. I'm open to virtual. I'm currently living in Central California, kind of in the Monterey area. I do prefer in person, but happy to at least like chat online. I have my practice under Anchored Heart Energy, so anchoredheartenergy.com, and then my Instagram. I don't really post that much, but you're welcome to message me, is Nerdy Nature Lady.
Love it. I will tag both of these in the show notes as well.
Sweet. I also think it's worth mentioning too that David has a book
Oh, yeah.
that's actually like really casually, it's basically his Dharma talks on Sundays and in Sesshin that a couple of his students basically transcribed and published in conjunction with him. And so it's called A Temporary Affair, Talks on Awakening in Zen by David Radin, Radin. It's available on Amazon. And it's like we've been saying, like it's very easy to understand the way that he talks about it.
Yes.
So it's like less Shakespearean Zen.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. And he has a beautiful poetry book too. So I'll see if I can link both of those in the show notes as well.
Sweet. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you again for coming and having this chat with me.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Wait a minute. It's the outro. I just want to take a quick moment to say thank you so much for being a part of this self-care creature movement. This is a movement for individuals, our communities, the planet. If you're looking to dive deeper into our community, the best place to start is with our free mini courses. We also have many more online and in-person offerings. You can join our email list to stay up to date, or just check out, you guessed it, the Self-Care Creature website, selfcarecreature.com. You can also be a part of the conversation and help form what this podcast is all about. Simply just go to the feedback form in the notes below where you can ask questions and share your thoughts. Lastly, we're gonna ask, would you please leave a review on whatever platform you're on right now? We would really love the help to find more creatures in the world just trying to learn to take care of themselves. Thanks for being here, and thanks for taking care of you.